Bold and raw perspectives of local politics. Important information which impacts our community, nation, and world. Exposing truth, transparency, and getting to the heart of relevant issues that you just won't see in the clickbait media. And always keeping it real. It's the Michelle Tanner Podcast.
But I won't back down.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Want to give a quick shout out to the St. George Sunrise Market. Comment if anyone has been there yet. It is so awesome. I love that it's near my home, too. It's near a lot of homes because it's over in the Little Valley area at Hella Segmiller Park. It is every Saturday from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. So many awesome vendors, fresh produce, permanent jewelry, treasure hunts for the kids, line dancing. I mean, you name it. And it's such an awesome, awesome venue for it. So definitely check them out. Bring the family every Saturday, 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. at the St. George Sunrise Market. All right. And then today I am super excited for our guest. I have John Barrick with me, joining me via Skype. And let me tell you a little bit about John, because this guy, he really knows his stuff. He has been a professor for several years. He is a tax accounting professor for the last 26 years. He's previously worked for the Joint Committee on Taxation for the United States Congress. He has taught and consulted on state and local taxation for over 20 years. He's also the co-author of the leading tax textbook published by McGraw-Hill. So, John, thank you so much for joining me today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. Yeah, one of the things that really has intrigued me about you is your knowledge and research into election integrity here in the state of Utah. So I would love it if you can maybe just first talk to us about some of your background and what's been going on over the last few years that's kind of led you to your research into elections.
Yeah, thanks. So, you know, most of my personal political experience is at the national federal level, working for the United States Congress in the 110th and 111th Congress. But a couple of years ago, we had an issue at our local elementary school that brought us into local politics. And we had an amazing elementary school that a couple of my older children went to here in Orem. And things had declined a little bit, and we noticed some issues. And so in talking with a principal and a school board member who visited a PTA and spoke with my wife, we were invited to go and visit with the Alpine School District, our local school district, about some of the concerns we had, both financial as well as educational. And we were told things that just didn't add up, either financially, from a tax perspective, educationally, just all kinds of issues. And so after meeting with four assistant superintendents at the district level, we were more dissatisfied than we were before. And so not long after that, we'd had a recent election in Orem, a city council election. We had a new mayor and city council. And in 2022, they started to talk about local control and some of the school closures and some of the seismic concerns and then the tax dollars that were flowing from Orem. And so, you know, long story short is that they proposed to study whether Orem, the city, should have its own school district. And that sent shockwaves through the Alpine School District. And within a day or two, they were, you know, rolling a $1 billion school district, $1 billion in revenues, into motion to try to protect its tax base, a large portion of that being from Orem. And so, you know, I got to see local politics up close and personal. It started with a school board member who asked how to set up a political issue committee to the school district business administrator. The school district business administrator, you know, responded back, "This is how you do it." So she got her husband and a couple other local PTA, regional PTA members to set up a political issue committee.
Just
so
be
most
clear,
of what we're going
right,
to talk about is about this political issue committee.
Let's be clear right there for just a minute, because you're talking about a PIC, for those of you who've heard that acronym, PIC, Political Issue Committee, and you're saying that a school board member reached out to, do you say a member of the city council?
Oh, the school district business administrator.
Okay.
Once she heard that a local city council was going to explore, you know, a school district study.
Okay. So, and then they got family members then to set up this PIC.
Yeah. So the school board member got her husband to set up a PIC. He became the CFO of the PIC. And then two local PTA individuals became the principal officers of the Stronger Together PIC. And it, you know, it took them a little bit to get going. You know, they registered officially in May, but you know, the school districts, like lots of other public institutions, are required to be politically neutral. We have a school board member that's emailing out to, you know, teachers and PTAs, you needed to stay politically neutral. But behind the scenes, they're using their emails to, you know, create this PIC and to, you know, start getting the PIC going. Interestingly, nothing happened within the state of Utah related to, you know, the use of official business, you know, official government email to engage in a political activity. Although in a recent school district in Texas, two principals were indicted and are looking at jail time and fines for a similar action. But Utah seems to, you know, look the other way.
And our lieutenant governor was made aware of that situation, correct, and chose not to do anything about it?
Yeah. So, you know, during the actual school district proposition, you know, the PIC put out misinformation about financial information, which it gathered and gained from the school district. They, you know, they put out false statements about taxes rising. They, you know, the Utah Taxpayers Association, you know, put out a statement saying that their claims were patently false. But, you know, misinformation isn't illegal. It's just dishonest. But the real problem became after Prop 2. So the school district initiative was defeated by this political issue committee. But that's where this story really gets going. So at the end of this political issue committee life, the ballot proposition that it was created to form, PICs are only allowed to engage in political around a ballot proposition. And so, you know, they'd finished that. They'd won. However, you know, the PIC, you know, just started getting going. And so they had a victory party. And in that victory party, one of the city council members from Orem left that city council meeting early, goes to the PIC, party and says, oh, you should vote for whoever this officer says you should vote for in municipal elections. We're going to take over Orem. And that's illegal. A PIC can only act on behalf of a ballot proposition. So you know, they got candidates. They started promoting these candidates. They still had about $18,000 left of PIC funds that were left over from their ballot proposition. They forgot to file their final financial statements, which is illegal. And they also forgot to reorganize with the state of Utah, but they started courting candidates to file for Orem City Council elections. And so about a week before the Orem City elections were open for candidates to file, they announced through email their PIC candidates. And they also introduced the PIC. Also knew that they shouldn't be advocating for municipal candidates, so they also at the same time created a PAC, a Stronger Orem PAC, a political action committee, which is allowed to advocate for municipal candidates. The PAC just never gained as much traction as the PIC. And so the PIC continued using its financial resources, its substantial email list. We found out, you know, subsequently that they had an email list of between 10 and 15,000 people. Many of those names were actually extracted from local PTAs, which is also illegal. The PIC also got, I think I mentioned this to you earlier, the pick also needed, you know, some funding. And so someone wanted to make a $30,000 contribution towards the ballot proposition or against the ballot proposition. Well, that's a political donation and it's non-deductible. Oh, but that's not a problem for, you know, for this local Stronger Together pick. They organized the local PTAs. They got 10 local schools to each take a $3,000 contribution to a PTA, which is a charitable organization. And so that is a deductible contribution, and then ask the PTA to write the checks to fund signage in opposition to the ballot proposition.
Wow. So far I'm hearing, first there's this pick setup, which is suspect within itself in the way it was formed under a actual school board member, but then using her family member to do this. But then not only that, then they start supporting and turning themselves into a PAC, even though they're not legally allowed to do that. They're using the PIC to fund the PAC.
They're legally allowed to form a PAC, right? They're legally allowed.
Right, to form the PAC. But then the PIC itself could not then legally still be funding the PAC and funneling their resources to the PAC, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. So a PIC is not allowed to make a financial contribution to a PAC. Now, one open question is whether they can make a non-financial contribution to a PAC. So you know, they sent out over the beginnings before the general election and the primaries, they sent out, you know, a number of emails, and, you know, several Orem citizens were concerned. So my wife and several other Orem residents sent a letter to Deidre Henderson, the lieutenant governor, which is over elections. And they mentioned that we have a PIC that is sending out. So they had a Facebook page that had about 3,000 members. They were messaging them, they were emailing them, supporting candidates and pushing people to a PAC, telling people, you know, hey, there's a political fundraiser for our three candidates. And so the PIC and PAC were really commingled. In addition, this PIC, one other interesting thing about the PIC is that they'd hired a deputy Utah County clerk who counted ballots in the Prop 2 election to be their political advisor. And once that was pointed out to the Utah County attorney, that's changed quickly. And so that person had to step back from their political duties because they were conflicted during the election. But that same individual was still on the PIC payroll, advising them on issues past Proposition 2, which is technically is a problem, particularly when you're not registered within the state of Utah. They also hired the same campaign manager, the same individual from the clerk's office that was relieved of his duties from the clerk's office after his election issues, for the PAC. So we have a campaign manager, campaign operative that's over a PIC, a PAC, and three candidates for city council.
Wow.
The campaign manager. So you have one individual, a group of a PIC, a PAC, and three candidates all under the same campaign manager that's organizing things. And so it was pointed out that the PIC was advocating for municipal candidates, which is not allowed. And they hadn't filed their financial statements for 2022, their final financial statement, and they were spending money, but they hadn't filed a campaign financial statement for 2023. And so a group of Orem residents reached out to the lieutenant governor about election interference. And a couple weeks prior to that, or during the process of getting their verified petition filed with the lieutenant governor, it came to our attention that the Utah County clerk, the newly elected Utah County clerk, had also sent a complaint about Stronger Together PIC to the lieutenant governor. So she had two complaints or verified petitions related to their activities advocating for municipal candidates. And so, you know, that's where the story, you know, kind of starts from election interference.
And I read through your complaint, which was very detailed, and we are talking over 100,000 election law violations. I mean, this isn't just some little thing.
Yes.
I mean, we are talking major violations in large quantities. So I'm curious, because my perception of the lieutenant governor's office when it comes to election integrity has not been very favorable. We've had, you know, after 2020, citizens saying, hey, we want the cast vote records. We want to be able to verify. We want actual audits. And, you know, right. several other states released their cast vote records. And instead of being open to a discussion regarding that note, instead we saw the LG's office actually attempt to demonize anyone who would dare question the election process here. And instead we saw them using our tax dollars to put up billboards on I-15 to make us feel safe and secure about our elections rather than actually address the elephant in the room. And then we had the special election last year where we all witnessed the lieutenant governor's office put her thumb on the scale for Celeste Malloy when Celeste Malloy was, it turns out, not even a registered voter, registered Republican, when she went in to file for her candidacy, which per state law she would have needed to be. And it wasn't until after the filing deadline that that was actually corrected. Yet the LG's office neglected to inform the Republican Party until after the convention. So we have all of these things adding up. So I'm really curious with this situation of over 100,000 election law violations, what was the lieutenant governor's response to this?
Yeah, so let me take one step back. So a petition was filed, and Lieutenant Governor reached out to the PIC officers and told them about the violations or the complaint. They stated that they weren't formed, you know, that they weren't formed by the school district member. You know, they said that they hadn't spent a single cent on election advocacy activities. And then the lieutenant governor office suggested that they, now she did do one good thing. She suggested that the PIC actually dissolve and file their final campaign financial statements. In the process of filing their campaign financial statements, there was all kinds of information. There were over 100 financial errors in the financials filed. And so the lieutenant governor's office staff helped them correct these errors. And they detail all this on a Facebook post for the PIC. But once they filed their final financial statements, they said they had not made any we knew they'd sent lots and lots of messages for advocacy. We received emails, we received Facebook notifications and all these things. That was the original complaint. So the lieutenant governor emails back saying, hey, you know, they may have gained an advantage, but you still have several weeks before the election to get this information out to the public so that Orem voters can feel confident in the election. And, you know, we were a little bit dissatisfied with that. And as we started going through the financial filings that they made, we found out that they had sent mail through a mail service called MailChimp, which the PIC had been paying for months. And I'd mentioned that the PIC and PAC kind of operated together. Well, they neglected to change the payment for the mail services from the PIC to the PAC. And so the PIC was paying for all the mailers that went out advocating for these candidates. And so we did some sleuthing going into MailChimp, and we discovered that they had an email list of between 10 and 15,000 individuals. And so we started preparing a second complaint. At about that time, the election concluded, and the election was decided, the balance of power within Orem was decided by 460 votes. Literally 460 wow. votes. And what we found out through the MailChimp exercise is that they'd sent, like you mentioned, between 110 and 165,000 emails that we can verify. So more, like you said, more than 100,000 violations, in addition to all the Facebook messages, Facebook posts, et cetera, that they'd been sending out. So we prepared a second verified petition to the lieutenant governor's office, pointing out that their own help to the PIC pointed out that A, the PIC made a false statement to an elected official who was making an official inquiry into election integrity. So that is itself a violation of another law. They never did point out to the PIC that they had violated the law in numerous ways by not correctly filing their financial reports, but they did help them clean it up, which led us to this additional information. So we went back to the lieutenant governor's office in December, right before Christmas, and we sent an email or a letter documenting more than 100,000 election interference items were sent. The first thing that we found out is that my employer received a call from several individuals related to the pick. So the lieutenant governor's office informed them that there was a complaint filed. And the first thing that was done before they did anything was the pick, you know, use that as a political weapon to call my employer to seek for me to be removed from my position because I was, you know, questioning their integrity.
Whoa. So because you are doing your duty as an informed citizen and reporting violations that you are blatantly seeing, instead of actually them addressing these concerns, they are actually personally targeting you at your employment, your career that provides for your family, and calling your employer to try to complain about you doing your civic duty?
Yes. Yeah. So I got to have a nice visit with my employer and resolve, you know, some of these issues. So the lieutenant governor office receives the complaint on December 21st. We requested a meeting with her and her staff to talk about this before making a determination. And we heard nothing from the lieutenant governor's staff until we received an email with her response, which was dated March 4th. So it took her, you know, about 2.5 months to determine that there were no significant violations of Utah election law, even though the financial reports that her staff helped Stronger Together, the PIC, finalize in their dissolution proved beyond it with incontrovertible evidence that they'd sent between 110 and 165,000 emails. And that was the question that we asked the lieutenant governor in the second verified petition. We said if over 100,000 criminal violations of Utah law are insufficient to influence the outcome of the election that was decided by 460 vote, how many violations of a Utah election code would constitute a significant violation, of which the lieutenant governor's office did not address our question?
Wow, that is just incredible to me. And this is actually a lieutenant governor who has been found to be on the financial board of one of the attorney general candidates running for election, who has endorsed other candidates, who has actively funded opponents to candidates who they have gone on a witch hunt, such as Natalie Klein. I mean, it's just interesting being in her position over the election process to have so many conflicts of interest. Is there some type of personal relationship with Stronger Together that you're aware of with our lieutenant governor's office? Or like, what is the underlying issue, do you think, here?
Well, I think there's a couple things. First of all, I mean, we have Alpine School District, which is the largest school district in the state of Utah and in the top 50 school districts size-wise in the United States, that has $1 billion worth of revenue, has their own lobbyists, right? Their own, you know, their own lobbying mechanism. And they have a lot of sway in with the Utah State Legislature. And, you know, my guess is probably within the lieutenant governor's office as well. We heard about several, you know, from several sources that good sources that, you know, calls were made by former governors that might live in the neighborhood of this said school board member and others deflecting, from the investigation. Now, the one thing I would say is that the lieutenant governor's office is only allowed to investigate civil complaints, not criminal complaints. They referred these criminal complaints to the Utah County's attorney office, the Utah, the Orem City attorney's office, and I think the Utah attorney general's office. We haven't heard a single thing from any of those offices. So either the lieutenant governor didn't send those complaints on, as she told us she did, or those offices don't take her seriously when she suggests that they look into election, criminal election issues. And I'm not sure which, but we do know that I think in a comment that I'd sent to you when we were talking about potentially doing the podcast, there was a bill in the Senate last year that would have removed election duties from the lieutenant governor's office. And we know that due to the complaints that have been made recently, I think the lieutenant governor is recusing herself from election issues during the current year since she's a candidate during this election.
So who's running the elections then if the LG's office is not?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think they appointed a former elected official, and I think his last name might be Bell, from reading that is handling any election complaints during her vacating her office, her duties during her election campaign. But that's an excellent question that I don't know the answer to.
And the Stronger Together, I'm assuming, are they more of the liberal mindset, more leftist ideology? I mean, the type of candidates that they were trying to get in there, were they true conservative, liberty-loving candidates that they were behind that got elected? Or were they more the big government type of candidates?
Well, you know, local elections aren't often put into Republican or Democratic terms. But and as you know, most individuals within Utah are Republicans, but there's conservative Republicans, and then there's people that we would call Democrats everywhere else.
Exactly.
And so, this group, Stronger Together, clearly is of a less conservative Republican strain. So they support DEI in schools, diversity, equity, inclusion. Mm. They're for, unions. They are for big government. Their primary purpose with fighting Proposition 2 was to keep the Alpine School District together, the 42nd or 41st largest school district in the country, because larger school districts give opportunities for, higher administrative salaries, larger budgets, less local control. And local control is an important reason we got involved originally with this Prop 2, and Stronger Together is clearly against local control. So.
Right. Yeah. To me, this whole issue that you've brought to light, it really highlights the importance of a few things going on right now. We have some big races going on. We have a governor's race going on, which I am highly dissatisfied. I mean, this situation alone just highlights some of my frustration with the lack of importance on election integrity that seems to be under this current administration. And also separating a separate Secretary of State to actually be over elections in an elected position, to me, I think would be important rather than having that under the lieutenant governor, and also having an attorney general who is willing to investigate and look into these election issues, because as you mentioned, supposedly this issue has been maybe turned over to them or the county attorney's office. But what are they doing about it? I mean, do you see as being, potential solutions to these issues?
Well, these are excellent questions. We have elected officials for a reason, but sometimes elected officials can be influenced in ways that are probably suboptimal. That's why we have an executive branch. And within the executive branch, we typically have administrators or bureaucrats. Sometimes that's a negative word or a pejorative word. But in this context, someone who is not as influenced by certain individuals may, like election integrity, one of our most important things. The Utah House of Representatives put out a statement last year that basically said that let me read this so I don't get it wrong. Safe and secure elections are an essential part of our republic. And I agree with that entirely. And so there's nothing more essential to our republic than safe and secure elections. And, if 100,000 violations of election law for advocacy, as well as financial and other violations of the law, aren't significant enough to look into an election where a 460 vote difference changed the entire complexion of a city council, which has long lasting ramifications, what is enough? That's the fundamental question. We need someone who is willing to investigate these kinds of questions and give us answers. If we don't have answers to these fundamental questions, how can we have trust in the process? How can we have trust in our elections? Because elections have consequences and they really, really do matter.
Absolutely. Yeah. Even the at the Republican National Convention, they came out with a statement encouraging counties to get back to in-person paper ballots, getting rid of the machines. I thought that was really interesting coming even from the national level. And, you know, here in Utah, obviously, we have the universal mail-in ballots, which we all know is a recipe for disaster. I don't know who thought trusting our vote with the United States Postal Service was the best idea ever. But it seems like there's some common sense solutions to at least get some of the election integrity issues back on track, do you think?
Absolutely. You know, this Stronger Together PIC, which is now dissolved, right, under the lieutenant governor's excellent oversight, a little bit too late to save a Orem election integrity. This same group actually posted in their Facebook post that they were willing to come pick up your ballot and turn it in for you, right, which is illegal. Right?
Wow.
Now, it was pointed out by one of their moderators that might be illegal and that they actually couldn't do that, but that you should go, you know, you should make sure your ballot was mailed in time. Right. So, you know, in their statements to the lieutenant governor, we know that we can't advocate for that reason. We started a PAC. Well, they just didn't use the PAC. They continued to use the PIC, and the right hand and the left hand pretty much did whatever they want. And so, you know, these are fundamental questions that that need to be answered. And I'm with you. I think that we should have an independent body that's able to provide us with election integrity. Tell us what the law is. Why do we have all these laws that stated that this PIC committed over 100,000 misdemeanors and we don't prosecute a single one of them? Right. So, you know, we have laws. We should be able to have transparency. Transparency, sunlight's the best disinfectant. And Utah could probably use a healthy dose of that.
Absolutely. John, do you think that if, say, Stronger Together did happen to be more of the what we call the conservative Republican group here, do you think there's any, even though, you know, the race you're mentioning is a nonpartisan race, but is there any underlying influence of, you know, the Republican Party, the Democratic Party, that's also, do you think, playing a role in what gets light shone on it and what doesn't? Do you think there's any correlation there?
My personal belief is that there is some. They look at what the issue is, and they use that as they look through a lens to determine whether, you know, they're going to pursue violations or not pursue violations. I mean, an unrelated example or unrelated, you know, related to the topic but unrelated to the Stronger Together PIC illegal activities at our recent caucuses, right? We have individuals that show up at a Republican caucus, tell us how they are proud that they voted for Joe Biden in the last election, and that that we should support them to help determine the Republicans that that should be supported in our state. If you voted for Joe Biden in the last election, that's your choice. But I don't think that makes you a Republican. That makes you a wolf in sheep's clothing, right? And so, you know, there are those that would like to pervert the process and to use, despitefully use, the political process in every form, but particularly within Utah, where they feel moderates or sometimes liberals don't feel like they have a full voice. So they like to infiltrate the establishment.
I agree with you. It's kind of like what James Lindsay has said about Utah. He says, Utah is the fakest red state. And it's not because we don't have a lot of true liberty-loving grassroots conservative Republicans here. It's because the party has been infiltrated. As you mentioned, it's no secret that, these last caucus meetings, we had people who were not too long ago actually registered Democrats, but they've said, I decided I want to have a voice here in Utah, so I decided to put an R next to my name and see if I can change the tides a little bit here, which we've seen. That's exactly what's happening. And many of our current people currently in office, we've mentioned some of them heavily on this episode, in my mind, are not true Republicans, but people know, unfortunately, here in Utah, if you're going to have any influence, you've got to put that R next to your name, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, most local elections are nonpartisan. And, you know, in our local election here within Orem, both for Prop 2, as well as, you know, the election, which Stronger Together, the inactive pick, you know, violated our local rights and our local laws. You know, lots and lots of those individuals, basically, you know, it didn't matter. Like, the only thing that mattered to them was supporting, you know, Stronger Together, and a couple of these individuals. Principles don't matter. That is fundamental problem within our republic. Issues matter. Issues matter a lot. It's literally the pick was and the pack both were saying the only thing that mattered and who you should support for the Orem City Council was what someone's view was on a single ballot proposition in the prior election. It didn't matter what they thought about affordable housing. It didn't matter what they thought about taxes. It didn't matter. None of those things mattered. The only thing that mattered was how we told you to vote in Proposition 2. That is fundamentally wrong. But these individuals have an agenda, and they're out to, to corrupt our system.
And so. I can only assume with that whole attempted split of the school district and why there was so much effort put into preventing that, the underlying issue, I'm sure, is money, correct? Because they would have lost a lot of that tax base and a lot of that revenue, not necessarily because it would have been the right or wrong thing to split the district or the best thing for the children. I mean, heaven forbid we put the children first and their education first, but how can we get more money? Do you think that was really the root?
Oh, absolutely it was. It was the number one reason why Alpine School District, they were trying to protect their property tax base. And the Utah Taxpayers Association said that explicitly in their statement. You know, the ironic thing that you brought up is that Alpine School District is currently doing their own study to potentially split the district. And it's all because of the misinformation they provided in the Prop 2. And so Alpine School District literally is looking at dividing themselves, although they're trying to prevent that. And there's some really interesting information that you may be interested in related to a consultant, an out-of-state consultant that they hired called MGT, which would be an excellent episode for another podcast. A friend of mine who's running for school board actually got a grammar request that basically shows that the Business Administration Services at ASD provided all of the calculations and that were put out by the independent MGT organization. So super interesting.
Interesting. Yeah, we'll definitely have to have you on again and dive into that. So yeah. Just a couple minutes left. I mean, first, thank you so much for using your experience, your expertise in your field to be an advocate and to, I mean, not only watch out for your own children, but really everybody's children. And election integrity, as we've mentioned, is one of the most important issues in this country, because if we don't have that, we really don't have a country. And you know, with all of the craziness going on in the world and in this country right now, it's people like you who bring me hope, because that's what it takes to restore a nation, is individuals like yourself using your time and talents to help build the community, shine light on issues and transparency. So thank you so much for that. And I want to just give you the last, you know, minute here. Anything else you want to hit on, address? What can people do to make a difference in this?
Yeah, well, first, I'd like to thank you for the platform. Your platform is super important. Getting conservative Republican values out there is super, super important. And so you're a big part of that as well. You know, the thing I would say is that people need to be involved. Local politics matter. They matter more. Local politics determine everything from how our children are educated to how we fund our local government. And so it's super, super important. Elections matter. Utah has a lot of important items in place, like truth in taxation. School districts, counties, cities often try to trample truth in taxation. But it's super, super important. It requires a public hearing to be held. And taxes are a duty of ours to pay, but we need to question our elected officials and be informed in the debate and the way things are shaped. So super important.
Absolutely. Yeah. We have probably a whole other episode we could hit on talking about truth and taxation. We went through that almost a year and a half ago here in St. George and ended up being a very interesting process. So thank you so much, John, for sharing your expertise with us. Hope to do it again soon. Thanks for watching.
Thanks for being a part of the Michelle Tanner Podcast. Please like, follow, subscribe, and share. And always remember to keep exposing truth.
But I won't back down. No, I won't back down.
This has been a production from a podcast studio.